Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm a feminist, but last night someone told me about a sex party at a music festival. And instead of saying, wow, how sex positive, I said, that is revolting. None of them would have had a shower. Really, though, would you want to have sex with anyone at a festival? I know people do hook up at festivals, just ignoring the fact that both of them have been rolling around in mud and not queued for the most disgusting loo in the world and all of that. I'm like,
do you want to hear a disgusting festival story?
Sure.
So I was about 17, right? And I was at a festival called Oxygen Music Festival, which was genuinely like NAMM for 16-year-olds, right? And it was so bad, I caught trench foot, right? At that, like, I caught a disease you get in World War I, like 20 miles outside of Dublin, right? So that was... I thought it'd be fun to have a mud fight with my friend because I'd watched, like... MTV, and we were having this fight in the mud and like absolutely caked each other in mud, and we realized that there was a broken toilet, raw sewage. Raw sewage, no shower, right? Lost my wellies, still got a boyfriend though, right? Someone asked me out. He asked me out, and then he asked for a hand job, and I said no. So he broke up with me then. But genuinely, I was like, after, I was like traumatized, right? I had my
really
heart broken for the first time, but
yeah.
Felt pretty good about myself. I'm a feminist, but I went to Vienna this week, right? That's not unfeminist, but I'm a feminist, but I went to Vienna this week and I saw a painting of Jesus Christ ascending to heaven, right? And I looked at it. And I thought his waist looked really good. And I wish I had a waist like Jesus. I looked at him and I thought, you'd spend hundreds of pounds, getting shapewear made by Kim Kardashian to look like that. And all he's done is been crucified for it. I thought Jesus was cinched to the gods. I'm ashamed to say that, but yeah, I did look at that painting. I was like, it is a beautiful work of art, but he's looking good. You know? I don't know. I'm just always surprised that I'm attracted to Jesus.
I'm not.
I keep forgetting.
I think about your childhood. I'm surprised you're attracted to anyone else.
I know. Yeah, he was like my, you know.
Did you ever think about becoming a nun and being a bride of Christ?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. Yeah.
That was more emphatic than I thought it was going
to
be.
Like, some people want to be princesses. I genuinely, like the clothes that the nuns wear, the authority, I loved it. Like, you know.
You would have been a great Mother Superior.
I would have been a horrible Mother Superior.
No, you wouldn't. You would have been absolutely charming and delightful. But I think you would have known when to say when.
I don't know. I think I would have inflicted quite a lot of hurt if I was a Mother Superior. Do you know when you just know and you're like, that's not for me?
I'm a feminist, but I walk down the street in what is effectively underwear tonight.
Ooh.
And I felt really, really fabulous. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not anti-feminist, of course. Anyone's allowed to wear whatever they want. But the secret that made me feel that this was very sexy is that nobody knows it's underwear. I am currently wearing, in fact, I walked out onto the stage. So what I'm currently wearing is an underslip. Okay.
Oh.
This isn't a dress. I've misled you all. This is a sexy secret. This came under a dress. This was one of those under a dress bit slips. This is a slip. And then the slip is so low, it comes down to here. You could see my tits if I didn't have it.
For the listeners at home, you're pointing at between your titties.
Thank you.
I don't think I've ever referred to them as titties before, but...
This is a bra. This is a bra that you're seeing now. It's all an illusion. I'm just walking... I might as well have come in here in a thong and nothing on top. But what I've done is I've distracted you by topping it off with this extreme festival wear.
Yeah.
This actually makes me feel like Jesus because I do Jesus arms when I'm in it.
That's why I'm attracted to you right now.
That is correct.
I'm a feminist, but this week when I went to Vienna, I went on a roller coaster and I celebrated when the safety harness fitted me. And if it didn't fit me, I don't think I would have said anything. And I would rather have been thrown into a Wiener Schnitzel stand at 60 miles per hour rather than be asked to leave the roller coaster for my own safety.
Live from the Soho Theatre in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Alison Spittle, and our very special guest, Fern Brady, talking about neurodivergence. The first week of fucking January to fight the patriarchy. Not like those feminists who are still in bed finishing off the celebrations. Oh no, not like those February feminists who are waiting, Lady Dada'll come out, I'll do some equality fighting later. No, we're here in first week of fucking January, like the legends that we are. Thank you. You might notice that I am wearing festival wear. That's to convince myself it's summer. Because once Christmas is over, it's just this. It's just greyness and coldness. So we must come together for love and warmth, as feminism and God intended. And I do believe, of course, when I say God, that God is non-binary, because if God created us all in their own image, then... Sorry, Republicans. You're very wrong. Of course, I say sorry, Republicans. I'm assuming no one here is a Republican. If you are a Republican, though, and you've come, you are welcome to change. Any Republicans in? Give us a cheer. Any Americans in? Yeah. Wow. But all the Americans in then, I can only assume are Democrats or Independents. Give us a cheer if you're a Democrat. Give us a cheer if you're an Independent. Did you just say fuck you? That was one anarchist. One anarchist who's basically come into a basement
because someone said there's feminism down there and she's not. I'm not a fucking Democrat. Fuck you. I'm here for anarchy. She saw the sleeves. She believed in the anarchy of the sleeves. The great thing about this, it's made by a company called State of Disarray, which I think sounds a bit like Smash the Patriarchy, doesn't it? State of Disarray. Also, it's very ethical. It sort of like has people on there say, we make your clothes, and it's really, really lovely. It's affordable, but not so affordable that you feel bad. It's got that feel. It's really, really lovely. But it, the best thing is it makes you do Jesus arms. And those arms are the arms of vulnerability and power. That's why it's become a significant... That, the reason Christianity really took off, I think, is it had a really, really good central symbol. It's like Nike's got the swoosh, do you know what I mean? You just see the swoosh, you know it's Nike. Christianity's got... And you just know, you just know, you just know, you just know. And if you are Christian, again, you're very welcome, and don't feel you've come in, if you've come in here with a faith, you will leave with it. It's okay. I'm not here to change you. I was a Jehovah's Witness for many years, and I'm sort of done with that period. It's Women's Christmas. What's Women's Christmas?
It's an Irish...
Today?
Yes.
This is a very typical guilty feminist heckle. Just, you know, you're riffing somewhere, something got a good laugh, there's something got a medium-sized chuckle, and you're thinking, where will I go from here? Because it's, you know, it's all on the fly. And then in a regular comedy club, someone would shout, tell us a joke. But here, someone will shout, it's Women's Christmas! Thank you. Thank you. Could I just get you to say your name?
Hannah.
Hannah. Yes. So, Hannah, could you please... In fact, we've got a little audience mic here in case you wanted to come out. Do you want to come out and tell us about Women's Christmas? Yay! Hannah!
Hello!
No, okay. What you're wearing now makes me think you're women's Santa. Is this the feminist Santa look? It looks like you're feminist Santa. Okay, go on. Please tell us. You could take the mic and then, you know, talk to me or talk to them, whichever you'd prefer.
So Women's Christmas is the 6th of January, and it's an Irish tradition where women on... it's the last day of the Christmas festivities... And it's the day where women have the day off. And
oh!
So, yeah, so they don't do...
Oh, isn't
they do
that nice that women get one day off a year?
Yeah.
This one's Christmas.
So we celebrate it.
Oh, so in Ireland, because women have cooked and cleaned and raised the children and all of that sort of stuff for the whole of Christmas.
Yeah.
6th of January hits.
6th of January,
bada
boom.
Bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Women get to sit down.
And be like...
Is it for a full 24 hours or more like 8?
Well, it's Christmas night. So
oh,
I'd
for
like
fuck's sake! Hannah!
What,
they cook, but they don't have to do the washing up.
No,
this is Women's Christmas. I'm so sad. We were elated by the idea of something for women, and now it's been snatched cruelly away.
But they're supposed to get the day off, but the night itself is called Women's Christmas.
Okay, they're supposed
Christmas
to
night.
Get the day off, but obviously that can't happen.
No, of course not.
No. Not with the pay gap.
How would anything get done?
So they're very lucky and grateful to get the evening off. So men traditionally cook on January 6th
yes.
in the evening.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's...
I mean... It's small pickings.
It's sadder than we thought. But
it's
listen, we're grateful for what we can get, Hannah. We're grateful for what we can get. Thank you so much for telling us about Women's Christmas in Ireland. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody got anything else that it is feminist this week? Or it's the anniversary of the storming of the Capitol. That wasn't very feminist. That was awful. But there were very few women there, so I suppose that was... Maybe they were taking the night off for Christmas. Well, normally I do a bit of crowd work, but Hannah's done that. The crowd work came to me tonight, and I'm really pleased. Do you know why? It's Women's Christmas. If I'd known, I wouldn't have been here. I would have sent a man to do the guilty feminist, and it would have just been someone like, you know, Russell Howard coming out and going, it's Women's Christmas, so I'm stepping in. I'm a feminist, but I don't know much about it. I don't know why. Why is that Russell? Poor Russell Howard. That's nothing like Russell Howard. Jack Whitehall. It's more like Jack Whitehall. This is Jack Whitehall doing Women's Christmas. I've got a mother. I love her a lot. She's wonderful. I gave her the night off once. Well, I say I did. It was really the dishwasher. I'm incredibly rich. That's more Jack Whitehall. That's more Jack Whitehall. Are we ready to start the podcast? Yeah! Then please welcome to the stage my co-pilot for this evening, the one, the only, the incredible Alison Spittle. Yeah! Alison.
Ba-ba-ba-bow. Hello.
Hello, darling. Did you know it's Women's Christmas? You're Irish.
I did know it was Women's Christmas. It's kind of cool that it's just Irish, because I feel if it was worldwide, we'd get men on Twitter going, but when's men's Christmas? You know?
Yes.
Women's Christmas is a thing in Ireland. There's St. Bridget's Day as well. That's another day in Ireland.
Oh, there's always Saints' Days, aren't there?
Yeah.
A lot of the saints are women, fair play.
Yeah, but you don't hear much of them, do you? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
It's like Harry Potter. Like, Hermione's the only well-known woman in the Harry Potter world, really. Like Mary, Mother of God. Like, she's the Hermione of the Bible. You know?
It's strange that, because J.K. Rowling's really keen on women's rights.
Oh, shit, yeah. Ugh. I forget. I know. Anyway,
I'm not saying you're not allowed to talk about Harry Potter. I'm not...
Absolutely.
No, I just saw a gag and went for it, Alison.
No.
St. Bridget, if this is St. Bridget's Day, what did Bridget do?
She actually gave out abortions.
And became a saint. Does the Pope know?
Yeah.
I feel quite strongly if the Pope knew it was for abortions. He must have been probably just busy that day going through the paperwork and just, you'd probably had a hangover or something, just signing the bottom of each one. Thought, well, if they're on the pile, someone must have okayed this.
Oh,
and had no idea it was from Ireland and a woman had submitted it or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing she would, like, that's not the most famous thing that she's done, but it's a thing
what
that I've
could she have done
learned.
That was more famous than abortions in Ireland?
She met a king, like a high king, and I didn't think I'd be speaking about this, but I'll give it a go to the best of my knowledge. What she did was she was chatting to a king and said, I want to build a monastery on your land. And the king, who was not into Christianity at the time, was like, I'll give you as much land as, like, I think, like, now I definitely might have remembered this wrong, but from what I think it was like, there's a pig and a blanket, right? I'm not saying she invented wrapping rashers around sausages.
I think you are. I think we found out why abortions isn't the most exciting thing. Yeah. She invented pigs in blankets, people. She invented women's Christmas.
I know what I'd prefer at Christmas anyway, and that would be a sausage and a rasher. But that was...
Sorry, vegans.
Sorry,
unless
vegans.
It was a sex pun.
Let's say it was. But he said, like, so you'll get the land, but it has to be as big as this blanket that the pig can drag. And apparently the miracle was the blanket got bigger and bigger and bigger until she had a lot of land. But the abortion thing, presumably
that is why we call it pigs in blankets at Christmas, though. There must be. Oh. Must be named after that miracle.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, why we have abortions is, like, you know.
Well, that's very recent for Ireland.
I know, it is, yeah, it is. But, like, so what she did was a nun was crying and...
This is the most Irish story I've ever heard.
She was crying because she was pregnant and she was like, Bridget, I'm pregnant. And then Bridget put her hand on her stomach and goes, don't worry, hun. And apparently no more pregnancy. So, wow. I know.
Wow. That's the Bridget method, is it?
That's the Bridget method. She was doing a bit of Reiki abortioning. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think...
Reiki healing. Your hand up.
I'm just going to grab my grab my phone. Sorry. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That was a lovely chat, though.
Wasn't it?
Probably not going to make much sense.
Hannah, is everything that Alison said correct about St. Bridget? Because... She's always my Irish go-to, but I never check it on Wikipedia.
Hannah, like, remember now that St. Bridget was the founding member of Bewitched. Yeah? Hashtag never forget.
Hannah, would you endorse most of what Alison said?
Genuinely. Always. Do you know anything about Bridget?
She's got the cross.
So there's a thing called St. Bridget's Crosses, where we get reeds, like little reeds as school children, and they make us work as school children and manufacture crosses for...
You just never know with Alison. If she is just, it could be one long wind up, the story she tells me about Ireland.
No, I'm right, aren't I? Isn't that what we do? Huh? Thank you, love.
I mean, the
voice of a man, therefore.
Genuinely,
thank you, but you know what?
I don't wish to impose gender on you. Are you a man? Yes. You don't have to say it as if you're ashamed of it. We love men. But thank you.
Oh, sorry. No, I made that noise in a. That came out. I'm sorry.
Hashtag not all women love. Hashtag not all men.
No. I just made a noise and it corresponded with that, but that wasn't what I was. What's your name?
Vincent.
Thank you so much, Vincent. I'm a feminist, but I feel more validated by Vincent for confirming that I was correct. Then, is it a Hannah?
Then I did by Hannah.
Then Hannah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
To be honest...
That is fecked up, but genuinely, that is my truth.
All right. I'm a feminist, but I did too, but I'll tell you why it was. It was that Hannah just sounded like she was going to endorse whatever you said. She was like, I've got your sister. She had that attitude.
Right.
We didn't...
Well, Vincent doesn't sound like you eat, like, rocks of my shit at all. Is that it?
He's just been socially conditioned to say all his opinions like they're facts. That's how he's been socially... That's what men have been socially conditioned.
Vincent's an Alison Spittle truther, where he's like, she's not even Irish. Do you know what I mean?
He just laid it down. Firstly, we'd never heard from him before. That gave him some credibility because we're like, he's weighing in without a previous relationship. Secondly, he just banged. He didn't say, oh, yeah, I think that's right. He just went 100% correct.
Yeah.
And that's what men do. That's what men do. They think we don't know, but we know. We know. And that's, listen, Vincent, is that your lived experience? Did you make those crosses as a small boy? You did, yeah.
Okay. Vincent is also the Pope, so...
Can you imagine if the Pope just turned up at the Guilty Feminist? Like it was Sister Act. I would love that. I would fucking love that.
Well, he's like clapping along to I Will Survive at the end. Yeah. You know?
Do you reckon that we could get him on as a guest? Just to sort of interrogate some of his more ridiculous beliefs.
We could have the Guilty Pope, right? Where it's like, I'm a Pope, but... I'm not sure if God exists. Like, do you know?
I'm a pope, but I just masturbated before I came on this podcast.
I'm a pope, but I shat in the woods.
Hey! This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which...
undermine them.
I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is Alison Spittle. And tonight we are talking about neurodivergence.
Right, so let's. I'm going to do a quick vibe check with you. Give me a shout here. Who's on long-term contraception? I'm a big advocate of long-term contraception. I moved over to the UK, and the two things I love about the UK: number one, so solid crew. I love them. They're amazing. They're genuinely the best thing about the UK is so solid crew. Number two, the NHS. I love the NHS, right? They're very similar organisations if you think about it. Do you know NHS and So Solid Crew? We don't know how many people work in either organisation. It's just so vast. And also the government are trying to tear them apart. So I've been offered long-term contraception by the NHS. There are two types of contraception that they offer you on the NHS. They're both the coil. Now, one is the copper coil, and the side effects of the copper coil include heavier periods, right? That's a side effect of the copper coil. And the other one is the hormonal coil, and the side effects of that include suicidal ideation. So it's quite the choice you're given. And I was sitting in the doctor's office thinking to myself, now, Alison, you were a fan of the Smiths and The Cure. And don't lie to yourself, Papa Roach as well. You know the taste of suicidal ideation. Maybe it's better the devil you know. So I opted for the suicide one. And now I'm going to describe for you in minute detail the insertion process in a coil. Why? Because it's Friday night, baby. First off, location is key when getting your coil inserted. Location is key. I got my coil inserted above a Lidl in Archway. where every little girl dreams of her first coil. And I went up to the room and there was 3 people in the room and I thought this is quite a lot of people for what I was told was going to be a very small procedure that you might have to take a few painkillers for beforehand, but of course you could go to work that afternoon after it, right? And I thought this is quite a lot of people. There was a nurse, there was a student nurse, and there was a doctor, right? And I lay back on a trolley, I put my 2 legs up in stirrups, right? And the nurse is beside me talking to me. And she's saying to me, like, what are you listening to there on your phone? And I said, well, I'm just listening to Trojan Record compilation. And she says, I'm from Jamaica. And we have this big, long chat about Jamaican music, and it's great. And while that's happening, right, the doctor puts a thing inside me called the speculum. Now, if you don't know what a speculum is, I'll describe it for you. It's basically a piece of equipment designed to prise the walls of your vagina apart to give the doctor room to work in, right? It's a lot like a carjack for your puss, right? That's what it is. And the doctor puts that in and the nurse is talking to me. And I think, like, this is quite a lot of talking. Like, you know, I wonder what else she's going to do. And the doctor puts the... What happens then is I hear this noise. And it's a noise you never want to hear at any procedure, especially one involving your vagina. And it went like this. And I hear that noise and I think to myself, what's this, right? But I didn't want to say anything because they're professionals. I'll leave them to it, right? But the next noise I heard was a crunch. Once again, I'm lying there with my legs up in stirrups and I think to myself, Alison, are you going to say something? I'm like, no. They know what they're doing, Alison, lay back. It's fine. But the next noise I hear, well, it's just a noise you never want to hear near your vagina in any capacity. And that was, Jesus Christ. And at this stage, right, like to hear a Jesus Christ, a crunch and a pop, like that's the 3 Rice Krispie men of the apocalypse right there, you know? At this point, I'm looking over my stomach like a nosy neighbour looking over a fence, right? Going, I've heard a disturbance, right? And the doctor pops up her head and she goes, I'm sorry, Miss Spittle, this has never happened before. And I'm like, what's after happening? And she goes, you've broken the speculum. I've broken a speculum. I've broken a piece of medical grade equipment, right? Designed to prise the walls of my vagina apart and I've shattered down to several pieces. I thought to myself, is this my X-Men's origin story? Is this how I find out I got superpowers? Like, I wanted something to attack London there and then, you know. Terrorists, aliens, I don't care, just anything. So I could go outside and pull my trousers down beside the police and go, lads, I don't know what we can do with this, but just point me like a cannon, we'll see how we go. I wanted to text my boyfriend and go, you're a very lucky man. I'm going to stop here because, like, that's all the time I have. But there's more to that. Have a lovely night. Bye.
Alison Spittle, everybody. So I've written something specially because I want to talk about neurodivergence. I've never really talked about it on the podcast before, but I got diagnosed with ADHD last year, and it made so much sense of so much of my life. So because tonight we're talking about neurodivergence, I am going to read you something I wrote today. I have ADHD, which means I recently spent 10 minutes looking for my glasses and they were on my head. But I don't mean on the top of my head. I mean on my eyes. I was looking through them for them. ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. But recently a doctor said to me, it's not really a disorder. It's just that your brain works differently, so you're not ideally suited for the way things are normally done. And maybe it's not as consistent as other people's brains. But sometimes it's much better than other people's brains. So I guess it's like if a vending machine was said to be out of order because instead of giving out Kit Kats, it was giving out diamond tiaras. Or absolutely fuck all, depending on when you pushed the button. That would be disordered. But you could see advantages. If Vincent, if I pause, it's just because I'm scrolling up. So if you could just like busk, fill in a bit. You're doing a terrible job. That's how I think of myself now. An overly emotional vending machine that cries easily but really wants to be there for you as much as is humanly possible. But sometimes I'm faking it and wish you would go away so I can watch The Traitors again. Good things about ADHD. I can come out on stage with very little and fill the time because I believe that if I start a sentence, my brain will finish it. Has anyone got the start of a sentence? Vincent? You got the start of a sentence? This is getting a little unfair, but you started it. What a great example. That's a great example. It's a great example. I'm not trying to take your confidence away, Vincent. I love it. I just want a bit for myself.
You won't do that.
Oh! That's definitely Vincent's wife or daughter. Or just someone he's sitting next to. I don't know. Are you all right, Vincent? We want to make you happy.
Absolutely perfect.
Oh, good. Okay, fine. Okay.
Cool. Genuinely great. I love you, Vincent.
Genuinely do. Are you Vincent's partner? Yeah, okay. That makes that handjob stuff weird.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, don't worry. I promise I won't try that.
Bad thing about ADHD, it's easy not to do prep that would make things better because you're okay with relying on your brain to prep precisely 1 second before you speak. Good thing about ADHD, I'm excited by what you're saying. Bad thing about ADHD, I'll interrupt you to tell you that I'm excited by what you're saying. Good thing about ADHD, I will buy you lunch. Bad thing about ADHD, I will buy you a car even though I can't afford it. Good thing about ADHD, I think it will be easy to write a book, so I say yes, please, to writing books. Bad thing about ADHD, it is very difficult to write a book. And I only remember that while writing a book. Good thing about ADHD, I write books. Bad thing about ADHD, as soon as I finish writing a book, I forget how hard it was and I enjoy everyone telling me how good the book is at events where I'm not prepared to talk about my book. Good thing about ADHD, I'm a natural optimist because I think every task will take 20 minutes maximum. Bad thing about ADHD, nothing takes 20 minutes maximum if you have ADHD. Because you keep stopping a 20-minute task to do a four-hour task, and you interrupt the four-hour task to fulfill a lifelong dream, and you interrupt that to buy someone you don't know very well a car, because it will make them so happy, and they're doing such great feminist work. Good thing about ADHD, you now have to finish the 20-minute task and the four-hour task to make the stranger's car payments. Good thing about ADHD, you don't always have to do things in order. Two goods in a row. Good thing about ADHD, Your mind tells you wonderful lies. Better thing about ADHD, sometimes those lies become realities because you've imagined them in lie form first. And that's when your vending machine gives you a diamond tiara or a gold bar or front row tickets to ABBA Voyage because you imagined it. You're a 3D printer of your own dreams. You're a big wheeling, fast talking lover of the possible. And you believe that the best is probable and you're just the feminist to make it happen. You jump headfirst into shark-infested waters, but you can charm sharks and have learned how to float. You can manifest vibrant love from something that looks to other people like a soggy sandwich or a spent erection. You can make anything stand to attention with the force of will and the will of the people, and you can be all of the people. You nanny for the children of the revolution, and you imagine that almost every great revolutionary, an artist and thinker, an innovator in spirit is one of your people. Kindred spirits dispensing gold bars and helium balloons and three surprising wishes, and all of them can be wishes for more wishes. You're a genie, a magician, an illusionist, a lover, a liver. Your disorder is chaos. And chaos is a feminine force because it releases itself from the tight control and order of the patriarchy. ADHD is a disorder. Because every riot, every revolution, every great love song is disordering the world's expectations of how it should be. Long live the disorder that is me. Fuck attention. Now, it's true. I was slightly late for call time because I was writing that. But I can't write that in the morning. I can't write that 8 hours before the show. I sit down, I try, and I can't. And then, like, just as the deadline approaches, I just go, well, now I have to. And then I just have to, like, write a bit fast. But that's why it's not printed out, because I've got a disorder. Now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah, just briefly interrupting to let you know that we have a big Guilty Feminist live show for International Women's Day at Leicester Square Theatre in London on the 4th of March. Get your tickets now. It's going to be a spectacular one. We'll be in King's Place in London on the 17th of March. Get your tickets now. We've been having some fabulous times recently back out at live shows. We miss you. Come back out. Get tickets soon, though, because a lot of them are selling out. And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Even if you've rated and reviewed it before, it really helps other people find it. You can rate, review, and subscribe every episode if you want to. Please give us 5 stars. And tell people about the podcast online or with your face. You can also join our Patreon to get ad-free episodes.
And now back to the podcast.
Our guest today is known for being totally unique and completely fearless. Her caustic wit, exceptional writing, and electric stagecraft has made her one of the UK's hottest comedy stars. Her new book, Strong Female Character, is a candid and groundbreaking memoir of neurodiversity, sexism, and defying expectations. Put your hands together and make incredible woohooing noises for the one, the only, Fern Brady!
That goes against autistic. I hugged you there.
Yeah.
But I hugged you. I know you and I've met you before. I hate hugging people that I've not met before. So, yeah, I wrote a book about autism. Shall I read a little bit to you?
Yes.
So this is from Fern's new book. And can I say, I gave Fern's publishers a quote saying, this book is truly amazing and I feel it should be a set text. It's absolutely So, sorry, I shouldn't have said that before you're reading it.
I haven't read it yet.
But you must feel like you have because you've had to listen to me talk about it for the last 2 years or something.
Absolutely. I haven't read it yet because I don't read. So,
Alison, no, you do.
She's making it down. Basically, our friend wrote an amazing book, right?
Maurice got in trouble. Yeah, it's a brilliant book.
Maurice got in trouble. And Alison was like, oh, you should meet my friend Maurice. She's quite similar to you. She's writing a book. And then you said, Maurice has been living in LA having really nice dinners. And yeah. I was like, okay. And you basically told me the book was about her having nice dinners in LA.
Yeah.
I read the book. It was about her being an escort in LA. So
yeah,
dinners were involved.
Yeah, dinners were involved. I wasn't lying about the dinners.
It was just that's what stood out. I get that.
Like, dinner, yes, please.
But yeah, it's such a good, funny book. So okay, read
this
that.
Is absolutely wonderful and feminist of you and typical to be recommending someone else's book. But we want everyone to read your book. Please read something
I'm
from
shaking.
Your book.
Well, this is from chapter one. Basically, I knew I was autistic since I was about 16, but it was a pain in the arse to get diagnosed. I was too busy. Then I started having audience members come up and tell me they thought I might be autistic after gigs. So this is in the run up to that, circa 2017. It was becoming obvious that I behaved in a way that was deemed socially unacceptable at work. I'd made the editor of a hipster magazine nearly cry on a phone call and wasn't sure why. I'd had meetings where the producers seemed to think I didn't like them because I'd asked what the point of the meeting was. People really didn't like it when I did this and would often say, it's just a general chat, which is intimidatingly vague with no discernible outcome. If you didn't work out the purpose of a meeting, it could mean you ended up meeting the person repeatedly, like the time I met up with a producer for years, wondering whether it was work or if she was just my friend now. There was also the time I let a pervy old agent phone me at nights and chat for hours without ever signing me, as I didn't want to seem rude by asking him why we had to talk on the phone so often. Gradually, I came to understand that I was supposed to engage in a social game of pretending I wanted to meet the person, not for work purposes, but for a coffee. I understood this was called building relationships, and it's where you pretend you want to be friends with someone in order to obtain the thing that you want. Sometimes you had to keep these games up for years at a time to get work with them. It seemed nuts, but I'd learned the world wasn't going to change to accommodate me, so I started practicing it. Whenever I felt relaxed around people, I would let my guard down and forget to double check everything I was saying, as my curiosity and intense interest in fact finding overrode the tiny, wizened corner of my brain that ran the social etiquette program. My friend Dom, a painfully shy Glaswegian actor who I'd known for years, mentioned the time I'd tried to compliment him on his weight loss by saying, your weight really goes up and down a lot, eh? You're like the Kirstie Alley of comedy. Another comic said that when I first met him, I'd asked if he had the connective tissue disorder Marfan syndrome, as you have all the physical characteristics of it. Hearing it recounted back to me a couple of years later, I was mortified I'd hurt his feelings, but I knew it was true because at the time I had just read the Wikipedia entry on Marfan syndrome and felt it would be useful to share it with him. If you've ever been on a night out where you got blackout drunk and have laughed the next day as your friends tell you all the stupid stuff you said, that's what being autistic feels like for me. It's one long blackout night of drinking, except there's no socially sanctioned excuse for your gaffes and no one is laughing. Okay, this is the worst one. Another time, a comedian turned up to a gig after the birth of his second child. It wouldn't stop crying and his face was droopy with exhaustion. I didn't know anything about babies or have any interest in them, but wanted to make conversation and improve my social skills, so I scrambled for a fact that could be useful to him. I seized upon a Guardian piece I'd read on newborns. You know, sometimes a baby won't stop crying because when the mum is changing its nappy, a long hair falls off her head and gets trapped in the baby's willy. So, you know, it could be that. The room went silent. The comedian made a sound like something was stuck in his throat. There was a blind person in the room too, and I swear at that moment he regained his vision to stare me directly in the eye in a look that said, "You stupid cunt." I gulped. It was in the Guardian's family segment, I offered, grasping for some kind of credibility. No one said a thing. Is that enough?
Yeah!
I'm shaking.
This book really opened my eyes to, firstly, all sorts of things about autism I didn't know, including having had autistic friends, and I've read Hannah Gadsby's book, and you know,
that's my favourite one.
It's really good, isn't it? Yeah. But I felt like I learned loads more stuff in your book that I hadn't heard from anyone else, and particularly what it's like to be a woman with autism and that it doesn't get diagnosed. And one of the things you were talking about is how women are socially coded to mask in a way that men tend not to be, because of something, what I call it man-shivling. A woman has to be really turned out in some way or another to get responsibility. But if a man comes in with odd socks and a dirty raincoat and stares at the floor, people just go, oh, he must be a genius, give him an opera to direct.
Yeah.
And so I think that women just are expected to mask in a way that that we just have to pretend all the time. Can you talk a little bit about masking?
Yeah, I got amazing at masking, but it was making me worse. I basically thought that if I could, because I was good at languages at school, so I thought I can just learn all the right ways to be a woman by studying it, and then it's going to be like French verb drills and I'm just going to learn it. But it doesn't work that way because social rules change all the time and things have nuance and people have all these non-verbal cues and you're never going to learn it. But one of the reasons I thought the book would be interesting to non-autistic people is everything that happens to an autistic woman, like getting punished for not reading between the lines or not following unspoken social rules, it all affects non-autistic women in some way. I just feel like we get the sort of sharp end of it. So I thought it would be something that would be interesting for all women to read.
It's interesting that you say, like, you were trying to learn what it was like to be a woman. Like, what was your kind of, like, views on what being a woman was? And how did you feel that you weren't?
Well, because I speak in a really direct way, so there's that. I learned the term toxic femininity, and that there's this amazing book by an autistic psychologist called Devon Price. It's called Unmasking Autism. And he basically said, wait, what was the question? Have I got ADHD?
About femininity, like the impositions of it, femininity.
So Devon Price talks about toxic femininity, and that's stuff like, the way women socialise can be really painful for an autistic woman. Things like passive aggressiveness, or sometimes women will say something nice and they're making a nice face. Like, to me as an autistic, it seems like a smiley emoji, but they're actually being mean. So often you can get bullied as an autistic woman and you can't tell because it seems like they're making all the right faces and saying things in a soft, gentle tone of voice.
So
and
then like you, Regina George in Mean Girls, where she goes,
I actually, I've rewatched Mean Girls and watched it as an autistic film. And it makes sense as an autistic film too, because she comes, Lindsay Lohan's character in it comes from Africa, right? And Africa, it was a bit dodgy how much they like, Africa's so different and stuff.
Yeah, most comedies about 20 years ago are dodgy.
But if you rewatch Mean Girls as an autism film, it makes sense to me. And then I think, much as I'm not keen on Johnny Depp, but Edward Scissorhands is a film about autism. I think the person that wrote the story said that's what it's about, not being able to do social niceties
to connect. You tell a story about, in your childhood, a girl wanting to be friends with you and you going, sort of, why? Like, what's this about?
Yeah, so when I was really surprised I didn't get diagnosed sooner, because when I was little, I was best friends with a tree when I was five. And my mum has drawings of me talking to the tree. And
like Pocahontas.
Patting the tree, and then I remember little girls would come over and be like, let's be friends. And I just would sort of look at them and I couldn't speak or anything. I just sort of didn't know how to reciprocate. So then I started writing letters to her, but I was very scripted in it and I was very like, this is how we're going to be friends. So I would write letters saying, hello, Kaylee, how many boyfriends do you have? I have 8. I think we should write letters every Sunday. And I was very controlling. Do you think I'm still that way now we're pals? I'm always like, we have to go to this restaurant.
Yeah, but it's handy because I never make decisions. So like genuinely, it's like one of the best things about you.
But Alison's one of the best people at reading me, because we've been out in public and she can tell that I can't follow a group conversation and stuff. And she'll go off and be like, let's get you away from the noise. She's like my support worker. It's so, it is really sweet how she is with me.
But I also,
it's because you're my best friend and I love you and that's, sorry. But genuinely, like, I'll shut up, but like, I just think you're great.
But I also like the way Alison's saying that that can meet a need. I think, you know, like if you say, right, we're going to meet on Tuesday and we're going to this Japanese restaurant and this is what we're going to do and we're going to sit at this table because this table is the best table for me. That can be great. If Alison's like, I don't know what to do and I don't know what's the best and I don't know what to say.
Oh, so it's a good match.
Well, I think it's a good match. And I think sometimes we just become so obsessed with what's normal and then anything outside that is like, oh, poor you. And it's like, no. Some things that most people have in common are useful because that's how the power structures are built, to accommodate most people. Mm-hmm. But there are incredible things about people outside those norms all the time. And generally, those people are the people that make changes in some significant way, shape or form. And I think that's an example of a good match or pairing, that you're bringing something to the table that you might think, oh God, I'm so rigid. But Alison might be like, you're my favorite person to hang out with because you say, let's go here, let's do this. And she knows it's not control. She knows it's decisiveness. Mm-hmm. You also talked about being a child at a wedding when you had to be a little bridesmaid when you were tiny.
Yeah.
And you were put into a dress that made you feel certain things. And this is something I didn't know enough about. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, I tend to do this. I read you guys an extract that's about me offending other people. And I feel like at the moment, that's the way a lot of people understand autism, is how it impacts non-autistic people. But really the far worst bit of it is all the sensory stuff, like having to pretend that like the lights in here are okay, but like fluorescent lights in airports and supermarkets are unbearable to me, which sounds really precious, but if any of you have seen my stand-up before, I'm not that type of person. So I wrote in the book about how my family used to think I was evil because I would have these violent meltdowns as a child over the sensation of my clothes. And it tends to be with little autistic girls that you just get labelled as difficult, whereas it gets picked up in boys much sooner.
And so if a boy is having a bad reaction to his shirt, they say, "This something's got to be wrong here," and they take them to the doctor. The doctor says, probably autistic, let's test them. But if it's a girl, it's just like, you just don't like this dress. And so there's an assumption that you're not being compliant in a way we expect girls to be. And it's a really heartbreaking story about how they put your your hair in really tight braids.
Yeah, this wedding that was like legendary in my family, I had tightly braided hair and a itchy lace dress, and I had this meltdown, and then that became the start of the family saying that I was evil. My family are really Catholic, so they only really understand things in good or evil. And then that was just it for ages.
And so, yeah, but you were really harshly punished for that. And it just really heartbreaking because you go, this child is having a visceral reaction to something and doesn't have the impulse control to go, oh, well, I guess I just have to get through this bit because you're a very small child. But then instead of relieving that, they're punishing that and they're saying there's something inherently bad about you. And that really broke my heart. And I think there were other things in it that surprised me as well. At one point you were sent away. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. When I was 16, 15, 16, and I was doing the Scottish equivalent of your A-levels, I guess, I had a massive nervous breakdown, which I would now term autistic burnout, and got put in a CAMHS unit, which is like a child and adolescent mental health thing. So that was where I did my exams. And I strongly suspect that other people that were in the unit with, because it was mostly girls that were in the unit, I think a few of them were autistic as well. I don't know about the ethics of speculating on that, but I've written it in my book, so that's that. Because you can pretty much time your watch, but like, this is fucked. Since I've started talking about autism, I get parents of autistic teen girls messaging me, and it shouldn't be the case that they're asking a clown for advice on autism. But it's terrible that that's like the resource they've got to go to, and you can almost set your watch by it that autistic girls will have a terrible time when they make the transition from primary school to secondary school. It happens all the time.
It's what happened to my sister. Like I got two sisters that are autistic, and the eldest one wasn't diagnosed until she was a teenager, and then they decided, oh, we'll look through the rest of the family and see if there's like autism with there. And this sounds like so demeaning, but I'm just like, it took such a long time for them to get diagnosed. And as a family, with having burnouts and stuff, and it was like such a, if people had the information back then, I think just people would have a lot more empathy, you know, because I think the world would be a better place for people of any, you know, any different, and I get scared of using different terms because I don't want to be, you know.
For neurotypical and neuroatypical people, because not all neurotypical people are that typical. Like there's divergence within that typicality as well. And so I think just listening and trying to respond, and I think in many ways things have got better, but I think everyone should read the book, because especially if you've got kids or kids that you love in your family, because just being able to spot those signs, I mean, it will save you years of hurt. There's people in my family that have been, you know, diagnosed. And as soon as you're diagnosed, or even me being diagnosed with ADHD, which is nowhere near as difficult, but I think...
I'm glad you said that, because I have a lot of ADHD people trying to relate to me to be kind, and I find them so different.
Yeah, it's not the same at all. And it also, I guess, the way in which I have ADHD, maybe someone else is listening out there and going, but it is hard, really hard for me. Yeah. It's not, I don't think I can compare it, but I will say, just knowing, I've just forgiven myself so much, because the doctor said to me, I said, I just don't understand why some things are so easy for me that other people go, oh my God, it's so amazing you can do that. But then I can't do basic things that 10-year-olds do. I can't kind of keep my bedroom tidy. And I'm like, other parts of my flat are tidy, but the bedroom, it's just always a landfill on my side of the bed. And I'm like, I just get so upset with myself. Like, why can't I be on time? Why can't I do this? And what the doctor said is, would you give up being able to go out onto the stage at Hammersmith Apollo and being able to just talk without a script in exchange for having an always tidy bedroom? And I went, no, of course not. And she went, well, that would be your trade-off. She said, a tidy bedroom's just a convention. It's just a social norm. She's like, who gives a fuck if your bedroom's not tidy? Look at what ADHD is giving you and then ask yourself why you're so concerned about conventions. And it was really, really good. That was the second doctor I saw. The first doctor just asked me loads of questions, said, yeah, you've got it, here's some pills. I didn't really like the pills because it made me like, gun like I was on MDMA or something, you know, that,
you know, kind of are, aren't you? Is that like, is it,
well, it is, isn't it, speed? It is speed.
It's basically speed. And so it's like, but you know when you see people at festivals something going like that, I had to have chewing gum in the evening because then it would get really bad. And that was the only way I could. And I'm like, I don't really want this. I think I'm just going to try and... I might have a go again. Anyway, the point is, I don't think it's anywhere near as bad for me personally compared to reading your book. But I just being diagnosed is such a relief because you stop beating yourself up all the time and just go, well, this is how it is and we'll get round to these things. Can you talk a little bit about, like, you introduced me to some terms like holistic?
Oh, yeah, because I prefer to say holistic rather than say autistic people versus neurotypical people. Basically, holistic just means not autistic people. I wanted to be very clear rather than, I didn't want to say neurodivergent too much because it's such a wide umbrella. Like, doesn't it include people with brain injuries and dyspraxia and all sorts? So I was trying to be as specific as possible in the book. Going back to what you said about it is worth getting diagnosed if you're constantly beating yourself up over it. I spent about 3 years trying to cure my autism, which isn't a thing that you can do. I thought if I just read up enough on all the different social skills that it was going to just go away and I'd just fix it. And then I heard this amazing Radio 4 documentary with this woman that used to be a stand-up in Britain. She was autistic and she said that being autistic and masking it is like trying to speak a foreign language for 24 hours a day. And that's like the best description I've heard of it.
And I suppose you get more and more fluent, but it's always exhausting. Yeah. You never just get to speak your own language and relax and be able to joke the way that you can in your own language. What are the good things about it? What do you treasure about it?
The good things about it, well, that was also one of the things. I don't want the whole book to be talking about how bad it was and stuff. I think it really helped me. Basically, I was used to being excluded and being odd and stuff. And there's still hardly any women doing comedy in Scotland, especially from my kind of background. So I think that helped me. And I had the focus to keep going and doing comedy.
Is that because if you're autistic, you can get a special interest and then you completely focus on that? Do you think?
Yeah. You just have almost tunnel vision and pursuing stuff. And then there's other things, like a lot of I've read pretty much the whole newly diagnosed autistic women canon at this point. And it tends to come from the same voices over and over again. It was, other than Hannah Gadsby's book, it was pretty much exclusively middle class women, which is fair enough because it's dead expensive and costs not just money, but a lot of time to go and get diagnosed. Anyway... Fuck, what was the question? Have I got ADHD?
It's possible it's contagious and you've just caught it from sitting next to me. That's very possible.
Or what's the good things about it?
Good things.
Right, there's stuff I hadn't read about before, but I know this is a thing because a lot of autistic women come to my shows. I like having a disregard for a lot of gender norms. For example, I've mentioned this in the book a lot. Maybe this doesn't happen anymore, but I feel like a lot of women kind of police each other on who you're having sex with, or they did when I like that one laugh. That's my member of the audience. They police each other having sex, whereas if you don't have any regard for sexual norms, or if you don't acknowledge that being promiscuous carries a heavy social cost as a woman, then you're just going to go your own merry way. So there's a lot of that in the book. I've basically written a porno with stuff about autism in it.
I think that the sexual content's really dynamic. And it's really great.
Put that down on front of the book. The sexual stuff is really dynamic. Deborah Francis.
When I gave my quote in, you said, well, some of that's been cut for litigious reasons, like the lawyers won't let us say it. Oh my God.
You can't say that your ex-boyfriend was amazing at going down on you. You can't say that in a book.
How is that libelous?
I know.
That
also,
feels like the opposite of libel to me.
Is he going to take me to court and be like, I was terrible?
No man in the world doesn't want that in black and white. In print.
Yeah, no, you can't.
No,
you can't
no straight man in the world doesn't want that in print, or bisexual man in the world doesn't want that in print. Like, I don't believe that. Even if you check in with him, or you didn't want to.
We aren't on speaking terms.
All right. So you couldn't just text him, I'm writing a book. I just want to say...
Unblock me, please.
I want to say you're good at liquor, please.
Yeah.
Get your lawyer to talk to them.
I feel like a solicitor's letter which really scared him because it drops to thinking, oh, fuck, it's a solicitor's letter. Oh, God, it's about Fern Brady. Oh, what a relief. And then he would say yes to anything.
No, I think my book's lawyer really hated me. It was one of the longest legal reports ever.
Wow.
Oh, my God, you can't say anything in a book these days.
Well, what else did you try and say, to be fair?
I've been warned not to even refer to this. Basically...
You can't even say what you couldn't say. I suppose that makes
basically,
sense.
There was one day I thought it'd be funny to tweet that I was sacking my entire legal team for the book. Yeah. And they really don't like that. they were like, never refer to the legal process again on your social media.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
Because then people know that there's been things edited out. I mean...
I think so. I think because there was like serious issues within
but
it.
How can then Prince Harry... say
I know
like he didn't have those same lawyers did he because
no
he's,
oh,
saying,
he's going frostbitten well he can't defame his own cold willy.
I mean I think you must be able to say your own penis was frostbitten like in any I can't see what
but you can't so talk about the person that slapped him on the arse after she de-virginized him.
Oh yeah,
de-virginized like, him. I love that.
The de-virginization,
like olive oil or something like that. It's been de-virginized.
De-virginized him since he misplaced his virginity behind a pub on the road, side of the road. What a random... That was a random story.
Was that one of his teachers?
What?
Oh, no, I'm just guessing there. I thought it was his...
This is why your lawyers are... We've invited your lawyers to sit with a bell and just ring a bell every time you say something.
What else in my book?
Yeah, back to you. Yeah, because I feel like Prince Harry's had a lot of fucking airtime this week. I mean, feel very sorry for them, but do we really need a 6-part documentary and interviews? I mean, I know, but it's just a lot of fucking airtime for two very privileged people. I'm very sorry about the whole, you know, everything. But Jesus Christ, there's now like he pushed me into a dog bowl. And I'm like, mate, have you heard of refugees? Because Jesus. Anyway, sorry, I probably shouldn't deviate into that. Now, your book. There were lots of things you couldn't say. Did you feel when you took those away though that you still had? What were you gonna?
No, I had a really lovely time with my editor and publisher. They were great, and they encouraged me to say what I wanted. And I just wanted to offer a sort of messier portrait of female autism, because all the books I was reading, I've never read a book about an autistic woman I didn't like, but they'd all had very quiet, very sheltered lives, which is good. I'm glad they didn't have a load of chaotic stuff happen to them. But I was like, I'm pretty sure there's other versions of me that have also had stuff like this happen. So for example, there's more autistic women than you would think in sex work, which no one would ever, that wouldn't be something people would ever think about. But I was reading up on it, and just meeting people after my shows and stuff. I have a lot of autistic people come to my shows and a lot of sex workers, and it makes sense that an autistic woman would go into sex work, because we're often excluded from traditional workplaces. Strip clubs, for example, have really great low lighting. The uniforms, you can pick the uniforms, they're really comfortable. I'm being serious, I was a stripper for 3 years. That's also in the book, but I didn't want to read you that bit tonight. And the conversations that you have as a stripper in a strip club are very, very scripted, and autistic women tend to learn scripted things to say and just rely on them. So there was all these different avenues of autism that hadn't been talked about. I felt like I was just seeing the same version again and again in all these different autistic women's books, and I think that's a class thing.
I'm sure that this book will be very, very widely read, because it's very entertaining and it's very autobiographical with lots of really extraordinary details. And I think a lot of people who might not read The Middle Class Guide to Autism, they might not read anything with autism in the title, but they will read this and they'll go, oh, holy hell. Like, they'll suddenly have an epiphany that they are autistic, or someone they know should go and get diagnosed. And so I think it's a wonderful thing. But whether you have any, you know, prior knowledge of autism, or you're interested or you're not, this book is just such a great read. It's so funny, and it's also very moving, much more moving than I expected it to be, because, you know, I know you as a very funny comic, And I was crying quite a few times in it.
Oh, good. That's what I want, because I really think my parents are going to stop talking to me when it comes out.
Oh,
I was
probably,
imagining
yeah.
my mum reading that awful three-way chapter being like, what does this have to do with autism? But I basically thought...
What does it have to do with autism?
I don't want to say here again for legal reasons. But I thought, I wonder if I can take almost a tabloid approach to trying to teach people about autism, because not everyone's interested in hearing a lot of really dry facts about it. So I thought, if I'm going to take you through all these stories and I'm going to try and illustrate how it's related to being an autistic woman. So that was what I did.
And I'm really looking forward to it. Have you already recorded the audiobook?
Oh yeah, that was a blast. I made friends with the audiobook guy. Yeah, it was great fun. But he, within the first few pages, he was like, I think I might be autistic. And his best friend was diagnosed. But then by the end, after the meltdowns chapter, which is easily like the most embarrassing bit to write. He was like, yeah, I don't think I'm autistic. Because I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm a bit socially awkward. I'm autistic too. But
it's like a star sign in a way. Do you know, Leo. Or
yeah.
Not saying that everyone who thinks they're, you know, but people say to me, like, I think you have ADHD to me. And yeah. I'm afraid of like exploring that because I feel weird, like shame. And not to hijack the end of this conversation, but like, I just feel very weird about it. And
you
I
could
don't
just
know
get
why.
Diagnosed and not tell anyone,
like a secret.
But look, honestly, you know, you might get diagnosed and it might be something else, or yeah. you know. But what I've discovered, I think this is a discovery. Female comics kept telling me that I had ADHD, and so many comedians I think have ADHD. Because it's a job we can do, because we're lateral thinkers and it's not a lot of admin. And often on WhatsApp groups, I'll see people going, oh, I'm meant to be in Brighton and Manchester tonight, I've just realised, but I'm actually in Hull. Can anybody cover those gigs? Or, you know, or someone will put on their Facebook wall, that comedians of all genders will do this. They'll just go, oh, I've just got in my diary Peckham. Am I meant to be doing a gig for anyone in Peckham? Now, this is really common. But the reason it gets diagnosed more in women than men is because when men do this, people just go, oh, he needs someone to look after him. Oh, he's a boy. Oh, he still lives with his mom. Oh, isn't he precious? And when women do it, people just go, well, that's not acceptable. You need to know where you need to know where you should be. And people judge you very harshly. And like I've turned up late to a gig at the same time as a man. And I've been the one that's been like, they've been like, where were you? Whereas with the man, they're like, well, that's just Ronnie.
Yeah.
Why is it just Ronnie? Why can't it just be Deborah? Why? Why can't it just be Deborah? But that's why I think so many women who are in comedy have been diagnosed with ADHD, and so few men have, because what's seen as a disorder in women is just seen as a comedy career in men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Women are always, I always get annoyed on TV shows that all the people doing the admin and the organising, they're just constantly women over and over again. So there seems to be an expectation on them to just mother everyone and do all the travel booking and all that. So
yeah, I remember coming back from Edinburgh and this man came down the train, male comic, I'll tell you who it was later. And he was going, hey, has anyone got anywhere to stay? Because I forgot to think about my accommodation after Edinburgh. And he was just like, just saying, hey, is anyone, and everyone on the train was a comedian, so like he was just like asking everyone. And as he walked past, I said to this comedian next to me, I was like, why have female, she was a woman, and I was like, why have female comedians so got their shit together all the time and male comedians haven't? And she's like, it's just a social expectation. It's just he knows he can do that and someone will take him in. But she, and of course someone did, but she said, if you went down the train saying, can I stay with you? People would go, no.
Yeah.
No. And not because they don't like you. It's just that they'd be like, why haven't you organised anything?
Yeah.
So I think it's similar with the, you know, the masking that you were talking about as well. The feminist takeaway I took from this so much was women have codes. Women, sisterhood have codes where we'll go, yeah. And we expect other women to know what that means. And if you're an autistic woman, you don't necessarily know what that means. So you can be excluding with your sisterhood codes or not being kind to a woman who can't fit in and do that. And so ask yourself, when you're doing all of your, you know, some of them are nice, some of them are fun, some of them are, but are they, if you're noticing someone who's often being left out or can't seem to sing to that same rhythm, what can you do to bring them into the conversation? Or in fact, go and have a one-on-one conversation with them. And so that really, that was a real eye-opener for me. Fern, we're coming to the end of our time. Is there anything that you came to say that you didn't get to say?
Oh, I can't think of anything. Just, I'm dead proud of my book. I never say that about my stand-up shows. Lots of people are saying nice things about it. Please buy it. I really need pre-orders so the publishers are happy with me or something. They told me to say that. But it covers... it covers a lot, man. It goes from... If I was just to outline it, it goes from childhood, mace with a tree, teenhood in a mental unit, got a little girlfriend. Oh, we didn't even cover that. My little girlfriend in the mental unit. Then I was a stripper. Then I was best friends with an elderly Asian man because no one else would be friends with me. What else? Abusive boyfriend, success in comedy, the end.
I know that the autistic people in the audience will really appreciate you laying out what's going to happen.
Like, or are there autistic people in? No.
Hello. I mean, I think we advertised the topic, so I'm sure there are autistic people in, and I know of one, and I'm sure they will really love that you've laid out the chapters in that way and said this is what's going to happen. And I think, it's just a remarkable book, and I think you should... When is it on? Is it on pre-order now?
You can pre-order it now on Audible.
Where would you like people to pre-order it?
It doesn't really matter to me. There's a nice indie bookshop called Porty Books. Porty Books in Edinburgh, and they're doing signed copies and dedicated copies. But I'm going to put a thing on my Instagram saying the different indie bookshops. Or you could just go Amazon, fund Jeff's trip to space. I don't mind.
Great. Okay, and could you say the name of the book and the publisher?
Oh, the book is called Strong Female Character and it's published by Brazen.
Great. And Brazen is an imprint of Hachette, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's doing really extraordinary new voices. So I'm very, very thrilled that you're part of that imprint. Alison, do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, I'm doing a tour of my show called Wet, which is about getting the coil in and feeling suicidal after it, but it is funny. So... come along to that. It's touring. It's going to Edinburgh, Glasgow, everywhere. It's doing a little run in Soho on the 15th and 16th of March.
Oh, so come back here on the 15th and the 16th of March.
Come back here on the 15th or 16th of March.
Can they buy tickets for that yet?
They can do that right now.
So on the way out, they could buy tickets.
Oh, on the way out, they can pre-order Fern's book and get tickets for me and then have a nice life.
Great. Yeah. A huge... round of applause and thank you for the incredible Fern Brady. The wonderful Alison Spittle. A big round of applause for everyone at Soho Theatre. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest host Alison Spittle, and our very special guest, Fern Brady. The recording engineer was Grandela Zimbra. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Solitsky for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Kaufman, Gina Dizio, Zainab Mohammed, and everyone at Soho Theatre, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. I don't know. Where else do you listen to it? Like exercising or like, I don't know, commuting. Thank you. Does anyone listen to it doing anything unfeminist?
Unfeminist?
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine someone getting absolutely railed while listening to I'm a Feminist? Like, someone has done that. Like, genuinely.
I mean, I don't imagine it's many people's underscore for shagging. Just undermine them. Does anyone want that? I don't know that anyone wants that, Alison. Also, it's not unfeminist to have hard sex.
No, I know that. That's true.
And did you hear that? Who was that? That was Vincent endorsing that. No, Vincent endorsed that. Vincent, the endorser. I heard him go, yep.
That's true. Yeah.
Just to be clear. Okay. So we've had that. Okay. Normally you listen doing something, but tonight it's live. So when you hear me say live.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.